Good morning, colleagues, and good morning to the minister and the deputy minister, the director general, and all the staff. And we should start with our meeting. It's going to be a long meeting, and the sitting is at 3. I think it's sufficient time. Sufficient time for us to have a discussion on some of the issues. And there are 3 apologies that are there. Honorable Banga is not coming. Honorable Melham is not coming. And Honorable Maluleke is a new member that is going to join us in the committee. She's at Bates because they're starting at Bates. Melham and Pan, I guess, they are busy with the by-elections in Nelson Mandela Bay. Whether they will win it or not, but they are busy. That they must be here. We should allow then the discussion on the issues that we have requested the ministry to come and assist us on. Is revising of the municipal infrastructure grant to make. I know that generally the sport and recreation committee always raises this thing with us on many other meetings. We thought that is important for the members of the committee to understand exactly the logic and the rationale why you want to revisit this issue. Then the real discussion also beyond the progress on the implementation of the back to basic program. We accept the issue though that we must give the ministry some time because they are coordinating some of these issues broadly through other ministries. That the whole issue of the progress report on the state of the condition of the park infrastructure, we should reconsider not putting it for the agenda today. Allow space for the ministry because they are not really, they are not the doer generally. I think the department is not responsible for park infrastructure, broadly speaking. They don't build the park infrastructure, they rely on other departments. I just think that we should allow them time really to work out with other department or cousins who are working with them to have sufficient time. If they feel, of course, that they can do it today, we'll be fine. It's just a very difficult one. For a department that is not really doing that, it relies entirely on coordinating with other departments. Getting that information will take a little bit longer. I want to make a proposal that number 3, we should then defer it for other meetings when the department is comfortable on that. Because they're not doing it, Honorable Masondo. Sometimes I'm too informal. Honorable Masondo, not Bahambe. And otherwise I'll be recorded wrongly, when is Honorable Mason? Because really it's not a department board function to do this. I think we should give them sufficient time to work around some of these issues. Then they will advise us whenever they are ready to give us some information about that. And we should then invite the minister to assist us on a discussion around the MIG. And then again, after we are through with the discussions, we go to the main one, that is the back to basic program. Honorable Minister, we are welcome, and please, you can take us through.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members. Thank you once again for your patience. The time I got here from the airport, and on the matter of bulk infrastructure, we would appreciate a bit more time, as you indicated. So, if you could have that as a decision of the committee, we will certainly appreciate that. You're going to find me coughing from time to time, so forgive me for that. We also need more chairs. Can the committee staff arrange more chairs, because we have one of our colleagues here who's standing. On the MIG infrastructure, or the municipal infrastructure grant, you have a presentation in front of you. I'm not going to say too much. What I would like to suggest here is that under the direction of the Director General, one of the officials makes this presentation, and then let's look at what the questions are. But the context, I think, is perhaps important, which is on slide 4, which is that over a period of time, let's say there's now 10, 12 years, as the need arose, different types of conditional grants were put in place. And there's a list of them on slide 3, or some of them, I think. And what we've had is a process facilitated by the Treasury to relook at these grants and see what's relevant now. The plus side of a plethora of grants, because they're conditional grants, is that that money can only be used for that purpose. But we also know from experience now that the municipal infrastructure grant is used by a number of smaller municipalities for good reason and sometimes not good reason, for operational expenses, for paying staff, and for expenses not quite intended by the conditionality of the grant. And that then defeats the purpose of the exercise. The second observation that we've made over time is that managing too many grants that are in sort of parallel getting to a municipality is also creating its own difficulties in terms of managing finances, ring-fencing the money, and so on as well. Thirdly, that some of these grants should actually be, if you like, packaged together so that when a project is being delivered, you have a project fund, not these individual grants, each contributing a little bit to a particular project. So these are some of the observations which have led to both the specific review of the municipal infrastructure grant, but more generally, the conditional grants in our country, which have arisen since our fiscal system evolved and on the basis of the 1996 Constitution. So if you agree, Chair, I'm not sure who is going to do this. Okay, Mr. Heidenreich is going to, on behalf of COCTA, present what you have before you to you.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. I think we agree. I think there's no objection on the proposal. Can we invite you then to lead us? I know that the slides are very far ahead. It's far better to use our own and the slides here. You can take us through. Introduce yourself and take us through. Take your time. What issues want to emphasize and assist us to understand.
With your forbearance, Chair, perhaps I should introduce my colleague, Mr. Nell. You might not be too familiar with him. But the Director General on my left should introduce his team. Thank you.
Where the Deputy Minister haven't been introduced.
So this is my team.
As I was saying, with the Deputy Minister haven't been introduced, I would like to introduce the GCOC team. My name is Busi Matonsela, Director General, and on my immediate left is Mr. Temba Fossey, Deputy Director General responsible for local government support and interventions management. And to his left is Dr. Sean Phillips, is the new Chief Executive Officer of the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency. And to his left is Dana Adres, who's Director responsible for Municipal Infrastructure in the Department of Cooperative Government. And to his left is Ms. Gigi Gosnell, who's the head of office of the Director General. And to her left is Dr. Dan Smith. He the Minister's Special Advisor at present on matters relating to infrastructure. And behind some of the honourable members before that is Tando Zabeza, is the Parliamentary Liaison Support from the Office of the Deputy Minister. And behind him is the Head of Office of Deputy Minister Papela, Sifiso Ngoba. I suppose I've introduced all members of the team present here. Thank you very much. And Chairman.
Thank you very much, and everything in my presentation. Take out the floor.
Thank you, Jacob, and I will leave to say one to six, slide 2, 3, 4, so that we don't necessarily. So on slide 3, just to give members a background on the Municipal Infrastructure Program, it has been a program that has been established in 2003 with some pilots, but really kicked off in 2004, and has entered its 12th year of implementation, which a total allocation to municipalities to the value of 104 billion rand, which will continue over the next MTF being almost 46 billion rand. Of the expenditure of municipalities at that point in time, 2004-05, it has been 98 billion rand that has been spent by municipalities over the 10 years as they have reported. Continue with slide 3. Is to say that the program was introduced as one of government's major reforms to implement, to improve service delivery in a coordinated manner, and the Minister has alluded to that, the rationale for the original establishment of the MIG. There has been bullet number 4, talks about the various grants that have been consolidated. Of course, after the establishment of the MIG in 2004, there was the continuation of a plethora of grants that started to emerge again, even if the MIG has been created for the purpose of consolidation. You will see that the Integrated National Electrification Program is not included, and it was never intended at that point in time to include it because it was subject to the formalization of the REDS program. So the main purpose or the main intention is that communities must determine what government should be doing for them. So the allocations will be going to municipalities, and municipalities will interact with the communities, and they will decide what the priorities are to be implemented according to the condition of the grant for that particular community. But very important, I will allude to it further, it has to be aligned with national priorities as well, because you don't want this is a conditional grant and you want to have certain targets to be met. So it's not only about community priorities but also about national targets that has to be met. Streamlined reporting by municipalities of merit of grants administered by a number of departments. It tells you that before there was a lot of grants in implementation and rollout that require reporting and monitoring, and municipalities felt that they themselves cannot deal with the amount of reporting, and it's one of the initiatives to start to curb the reporting requirements that has to be abided by or complied to by municipalities. Then on slide 4, the objectives of the review, the Minister has alluded enough around this to say that there have been changes in terms of priorities and delivery approaches over the last 12 years, and the MIG program needs to be aligned with it. The policy, you will see, also has got the date of 2004, and it has been time for the update of that grant to understand what elements have been working, where elements do we need to improve to respond to the emerging priorities for 2014, and especially with regard to addressing areas of B2B. The objectives of the MIG grant review is also following in tandem with the grant conditional grant review process within government, which is facilitated by National Treasury. And Chairperson, as you alluded to, the issue of sports facilities is part of that debate. Should we have consolidated grants, or whether we should have further fragmentation of sector-related indirect grants? So the methodology on page slide number 5 is a normal methodology that we use, but the point just remains that we want to emphasize that there has been proper consultation with stakeholders across all government spheres, and we've had this being based on case studies in 27 municipalities, of which we've identified the key policy responses that we want to deal with within the review, which has led to the document. I hope the document that we distributed, the new policy review document, a proposal as we have it today. So what has been the review outcomes? Well, the MIC has performed well in many respects, seeing from strong progress in improving access to basic services in some parts of the country, and especially the MIC is a major contributor with regards to the job creation. 30% of projects, of the cost of a project goes towards job creation, and of course it is also geared towards enterprise development. Systems and structures across government are well entrenched and built over a number of years. As this program is almost 10 or 12 years old, the business processes and procedures with regard to the administration of the grant has been successful and has contributed towards the success of the program. On slide number 7, just to kind of to state the point around the strong progress that has been made with regard to the MIG, is that when you look at the census figures that came out in 2001 and in 2011, you would see that there has been a fundamental increase in the three sectors that we've mentioned there, water, sanitation, and waste, of which is MIC has been a major contributor factor towards improving the delivery of on those areas. On slide number 8, this is the latest expenditure figures from the MIG at 30 June. You know the municipal financial year is from the 1st of July to the 30th of June, and the MIC is allocated and spent accordingly. On the bottom, there is text that refer to that in 2012-13, the Gauteng has shown an expenditure of 74%, which has improved drastically over the next 2 years, to 95% in the 14-15 financial year. Similarly, in Mpopo, which has been at 58% in 2012, has also increased to 72%. Although not what we want to have at this point in time, the signs are there that the major improvements are taking place with regard to that province. Mpumalanga, 57% in 2012-13, has also majorly improved to 2014-15 to 86%. Similarly, Northern Cape, 73% in 2012 to 85% in 2014-15, and Northwest, 83% to 89% in 2014-15, showing that the absorption rate of municipalities spending on the ground are actually improving over the years. Slide number 9 just shows you the few outputs that have been achieved by the MIC over the cumulatively figures since the inception, and the figures are illustrated in the last 3 years, that we have over 2 billion households being benefiting from water since the inception. For sanitation, 1.5 million households. Roads, although 4,000 kilometers, this is an indicator that has changed since 2012, and since the measurement of it in 2013, 4,988 kilometers of roads have been reported to be funded from the MIG. In terms of community lighting, remember the MIG does not include electrification connections, but community lighting, and has benefited 603,000 households since the inception. Sports and recreation, Chairperson, is one of the areas, just again, that you've alluded to, one of the areas, and we've reported the portfolio committee for the last 3 years, that 699 sporting facilities have been delivered through the grant. So the context of, slide number 10, the context of the service delivery has changed, and MIC must adapt to respond to these changes, and I've alluded to that. Increased acknowledgement of municipal differences in terms of spatial and performance realities. And we're seeing that being one of the key areas that has been identified by the B2B initiative, that not all municipalities are the same, and we need to treat them with specific interventions to deal with the infrastructure delivery. Challenges of infrastructure relating to planning and operations and maintenance, we're seeing that the challenges are emerging for operations and maintenance. There are returns of projects that we funded some time ago in the past from the MIG being returned for refinance by the municipal infrastructure grant is one of the areas that we need to curb. We also want to widen the view of expenditure needs, widening the view of expenditure needs in many municipalities, as some municipalities have already eradicated some of their backlogs and have now wanting to utilize the MIG funding to venture into some economic infrastructure or even with regard to building of infrastructure relating to growth. So what are we in our engagement and our consultation processes on slide number 11, there are a few policy responses that we've developed that have been included within the policy document or the draft policy document that has been given to members. Make allowance of the use of the mix for renewal more explicit and must take place within the context of proper infrastructure management, including adequate maintenance. Allow use of mix for economic infrastructure. That was not previously one of the key areas, but allow it for economic infrastructure that unblocks economic growth and become a catalyst for revenue generation. Also, one of the areas is the issue sustainability of infrastructure. Infrastructure grants should only be applied where there's proper operations and maintenance arrangements. And we've seen in many of our instances and where we have allocated and the money has been spent, but not necessarily proper maintenance and operations plans have been in place, and that's one of the areas that we are focusing on. Allow municipalities to spend up to 5% of the MIG allocations for retail repairs and maintenance, subject to planned maintenance program being in place. Although this is one of the more contentious issues with National Treasury, although it has been a proposal within the grant review process, National Treasury of the view that there is enough funding within municipalities with regard to the equitable share, the big component of the equitable share, and an additional 10% that's given to maintenance on the equitable share, that enough money is in fact in place to deal with repairs and maintenance. It's our view that we've seen there are too many returns, and the way that we want to curb it is by investing in repairs and maintenance for infrastructure, as it will reduce the comebacks or the proper for those projects ultimately to be replaced. So extending the lifespan of a particular asset is very important for us. One of the other areas that we want to introduce is that we want to introduce two mix streams. The one mix stream is...
Can I interrupt the presenter and point out that slides 11, 12, 13, and 14 are all work in progress. So these shouldn't be taken as firm proposal. So this is work in progress. You've asked what progress are we making. Well, the review is progressing, but these are now thoughts emerging from this process, subject to discussion with various role players.
Chairperson, yes, I can't emphasize the issue that the point that the minister raised more enough. This is just the points that is emerging from the consultation process. So we want to introduce two mix streams. The one current is the mix one is the current mix stream, where we have this project-based approach. Maybe the MIG 2 has less conditionality, not necessarily less conditionality, but different conditionalities, wanting to speak to how a group of projects, as an example, would address spatial integration or would deal with the areas of growth and economic growth, rather than having one-on-one projects identified by municipalities trying to deal with backlogs only in a particular context and not dealing with the space in totality. Allow municipalities then the second bullet on page 12, allow municipalities to be using some of the MIC funding in district spaces for rural roads. According to our conditions, the funding allocated to district municipalities are only allowed for water and sanitation projects. But what we are seeing is that many of our districts have taken up the responsibility or have been assigned roads, and we want to have the MIC grant also dealing with the roads within district municipalities. I think that the third bullet is extremely important. The MIC should also be properly incentivized based on strong performance. What we are seeing is that the MIC is not necessarily being used as a proper lever to meet certain objectives of the local government sector, and this is one of the areas that we need to promote. So this is one of the areas that the Minister has indicated further work has to be done. Introduce infrastructure investment plans as a condition for municipal allocations. And we're saying that if a municipality hasn't got, doesn't have an infrastructure investment plan, a clear infrastructure investment plan, or why would we be giving them an allocation? And we want to actually get into understanding with each and every municipality that this is how we see its priority going forward across all sectors, not only on one or two sectors. What is the, so the infrastructure investment plan becomes the integration tool to understand what infrastructure would be required and when that will be fit within the IDB to ensure the capital expenditure envelope is sustainable, meaning that when a municipality at the end of the day chooses a project, it is not beyond its maintenance and operations capability. We need to bring that back into the equation. Then the next response is a top slice of MIC for regional strategic municipal infrastructure for infrastructure that is regionally significant or national priority or required to address an urgent situation. That's on slide 13, my apologies. So there's already a similar grant to that. We would call it the RBIC or the Regional Bulk Infrastructure Grant, but there's other sectors that will also benefit from that. But they have not had the opportunity or the will or capacity to put up or make a suggestion with regard to creating of a regional strategic municipal infrastructure that goes beyond the allocation of the municipality. And the only thing that we need to guard against this type of top slicing is scrupulous discretionary allocations by administrators. So we need to be very careful that this type of proposal meets the intended objectives. One of the areas that we've identified is also improved coordination of MIC across the different spheres. It's the reintroduction of coordination structure that's been lagging behind for the last 5 years. Improved national sector policies on basic services. There are especially one specific sector which has only recently started to reconsider the policy with regard to this sector, which is the sanitation sector, and this will have to be worked within this approach of coordination. Active engagement by sector departments in planning and budgeting process of targeted municipalities gives them probably one of the major constraints that we've got is that the sector departments, with the MIC being a multi-sectoral program, sector departments not playing their required responsibility role within the budget and planning process of municipalities, meaning that they are not adequately communicating to municipalities and communities their sector priorities, leading to a level of frustration. And if again, Jefferson, you've mentioned the issue of sports and recreation, one of the things that we've identified within that context is that department does not necessarily communicate with municipalities their sector priorities, leading to uncoordinated or untargeted or non-relevant projects for that sector to be implemented. Improve monitoring and reporting. One of the areas that we need to improve is following the RAND, and we need to beef up in that drastically to secure that, to clearly identify to all stakeholders what has actually been achieved by the MIC program. So further work to be concluded is the work on slide number 14. Is the work to be done on the understanding what a MIC two stream would be identify qualifying municipalities, what the criteria would be, and what the process would be, and what the migration from a MIG 1 to a MIG 2 would imply. High-level design on incentives, probably using the MIG as an adequate lever to achieve certain level government sector objectives, is probably what we want to solidify in that context. And we want to promote a conceptual proposal for implementing MIG and county municipalities. Proposals relate to the use of regional management contracts as a means of increasing capacity and putting systems in place municipalities to engage infrastructure effectively over the long term. Municipalities are struggling with capacity, and we need to provide proper, and the suggestion is here, a regional management capacity from which a municipality can draw on to effectively manage its infrastructure. So in conclusion, on page 415, the target outcome of the MIG is the provision of sustainable basic services to the poor. We have not deterred from that principle. There are many spaces still subject to not having basic services, which will ultimately contribute to alleviation of poverty. Provide municipalities with a consolidated capital grant, the point the Minister raised with the rationale of the MIG initially, that allows that the flexibility to prioritize infrastructure investment needs according to their specific circumstances, in line with the norms and standards set by national governments. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister. If you want to share some points, we will allow that.
Thank you, Chair. Just to perhaps underline a few points. The first is that MIG over the last 12 years was a fascinating experiment that has worked. So that is a good thing. Secondly, you can see the spending patterns on MIG have improved. They're not entirely satisfactory yet. So the kind of monitoring system that COPTA is now trying to put in place, in addition to financial reporting that we see, will hopefully in the next 6 to 9 months begin to show some results in this area. The third is the question of embedding certain institutional processes and practices. So there is a process, as Mr. Hedensick was saying, that is in place. But there's some interesting challenges. How do you operate at a logistic level? How do you get multi-year planning going? And how do you, certainly in the more difficult parts of the country, create the planning and implementation capacity that will improve the way in which money is spent. The other lesson is the opposite of one size fits all, that you can't have a single formula that applies to everybody. But then this is part of the learning process and one which will guide us where we go. But part of the success of the future, or in the future, is going to be what you said repeatedly, and we'll start saying it even more loudly, is doing more to encourage integrated planning and delivery, where government cannot and should not work in silos. And there's some interesting areas of collaboration with, for example, water and sanitation. But there are other areas that we need to bring on board through the interministerial task team that the President has set up. But importantly, as the presenter said, if we could all agree that the municipal IDP must contain all of the plans of all government and related entities meant for that particular geographic area within the municipality, over a 2 or 3 year period, then we would have made quite an important institutional jump, so to speak. And perhaps the last point is the element of introducing other areas that this grant or its modified form could apply to, i.e. roads. And economic infrastructure is actually quite important in many of our communities. In some places, it's a very simple thing. They're setting up secure business stalls that the public or the community could actually use. And they know it's secure, their goods can be stored, they can come back the next morning, and you create interesting marketplaces. In too many of our areas. We have people operating on dusty roadsides, very little support from municipalities, and understanding this need better is going to be crucial for the people who have enterprising approaches to earning an income in those areas, but also economic development and therefore enhancing revenue possibilities in some of the areas as well. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister, for the decisions. Let us invite the honourable members, if they want to pose questions, they want to comment, they want to make proposals. Honourable Lengwa, Honourable Mteto, Honourable Masono, Honourable Mashuku.
Thank you very much, Chair, colleagues, Minister, and the delegation. I just want to maybe, in a way, build on what the Minister has already spoken about, Chair, which is the issue of funds not being spent on what they are intended to do. So this borrowing from Peter to pay Paul sort of approach in using the MIG. To say, in the presentation it speaks to, I think it's slide 8, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, it is slide 8. The expenditure and so on, to say, of those percentages that are given there, how much of that is actually spent or supposed to be spent on? Because it's all good to watch this, thinking the bulk of the money has been spent, but has it actually been spent on? Which I think we need to pay a greater emphasis on that to ensure that the funds are going to function which they are intended for. If we are going to say funds not going to function as opposed to functions following the funds, because it means we must be able to give support to those municipalities if there's a problem, if they have to pay salaries using the MIG fund, because it means there's an institutional and capacity problem in those municipalities in terms of their spending. So if we could zoom into the interventions, if they're work in progress, I will accept that check, but I think it sets up the MIG for failure and does not fulfill its intended intentions, rather, if it's not spent on supposed to be spent on. So if we could just be taken through that particular challenge and how it is being addressed. Thanks.
Yes, Chair. Mine was also on slide 8. My interest here is to see the pattern, because this is a consolidated figures between 2013-2014. I would be interested to see if there are provinces that are improving or else there are provinces that seem, because the percentage, if it's consolidated, it doesn't give you the whole picture what was happening in the past. You might find that I'm trying to address the issue where a province was has been spending very little and all of a sudden jumped to 100%, so that we see that trend. What is the pattern there? I'm only interested in the pattern there.
Just to appreciate the opportunity to engage on such an important matter from the minister, but to go on and say that these huge projects will not happen in a systematic manner. Unless we say up front where will we be in year 1, 2, 3 and 7 and so on. I think that we need that kind of commitment that may assist to propel transport in some meaningful way. The other issue is an issue that is not necessarily included in the presentation, and one also concerned that this is work in I would like to explore is this whole question of what is it that we're doing to leverage resources from the private sector? For instance, you know, the building of Oxford, which is not a township, but a cluster of townships, happened over the years, but the core, the kernel of that was built with some assistance from our America, the loan, you know, and so on, and the payment that was worked out in a particular way, and so on. I mean, we need to visit some of those models if we're to make a big dent and an impact on some of them.
Chair, part of my question was covered by Honorable Kremba, but I will just ask what are the consequences for using NIC funds for unintended purposes by municipalities?
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine is just a concern, maybe especially from the Department of the Minister, that how Minister can assist the municipality, influencing the IGP of municipality to align with the national, the province, the national department and the provincial department, because the budgeting cycle or process are not the same. Sometimes municipalities are budgeting when already the national was budgeted, then how can I assist on that? Because it gives us a problem in the municipalities. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe firstly, just to welcome the review of the grant system, MIC. I'm happy that the department is going to make MIC to be more flexible, particularly around the question of operation and maintenance, because that has been one area where there's been a concern around that you put in new infrastructure, but there is no sufficient provision made on the question of operation and maintenance, which is a welcome development, and I think that in the final policy outcome, if this element can be captured so that municipalities are able to provide to sustain the infrastructure that in most instances so much money gets put into making sure that we put it in place. Lastly, Chair, I think slide number 7 on the number of households having access to water, sanitation, and solid waste, and a range of other services. I think it validates the statistics from Statistics South Africa that we interacted with last year. Remember, we had a workshop around October where we were taken through a presentation by the Statistician General, which was sort of empirically confirming that there has been much progress that was made over the past 10 years in terms of household getting access, the number of households getting access to particular services, and the extent to which the policy outcomes are going in terms of dealing with the question of poverty. So I welcome slide number 7. I think it's just a reconfirmation, which confirms the necessity for MIC grant funding system to continue, because sometimes it is the only source of capital expenditure in most of the municipalities, especially the smaller municipalities. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Sorry. Let me invite the department, the minister, Director General, representatives, just to have a point that I raised, some of the questions, some are comment broadly. Anyone want to take a point? Honorable Minister?
Let me thank the honorable members for both their questions and their comments. My colleagues from the department will add where they have more information than I do. Two of our honorable members asked about what happens when MIG funds are not spent as they should. So clearly, depending on the extent to which this happens, is that particular municipality will be compromising on services. But these big gross figures don't represent adequately the quantum of money that really goes to smaller municipalities. So if I'm right, some of them could receive $5 million a year, $7 million a year. Those are fairly small amounts of money. And this is related to Honorable Masondo's question as well. How do we bulk up this money? Now, the Treasury has together with ourselves, begun to looking at how do we bulk up. So if you have a $20 million project that could be completed in a year or a year and a quarter, but you'll have to wait 3 years before you get $20 million rands. So should you wait for 3 years, or can you bulk up the $5 or $7 million rands now in lieu of paying off that money, for example, to the Development Bank of Southern Africa, over a three-year period from the future MIG grants that you will be actually getting. So there's some work in this area that's going on, Chair. Again, it's still in the thinking stage, but one of the lessons from here is that if you keep giving $5 million and $4 million and $7 million to smaller municipalities, they can't take on some of the bigger challenges that they actually have before them. So if you buy a mayor's car, for example, from the $5 million rands, and let's assume the car costs just under $1 million rands or something like that, then 20% of your money is going into the mayor's car, not into the ground, for the purpose that it was actually intended. What we don't have, and this Mr. Heidenreich has it, and I don't think we want to create the impression that this is a pervasive practice. So I know that we might be looking for fault lines here, but I'm not sure. I don't think we can say it's a pervasive practice which undermines the 100 billion rand that has been spent over the last 12 years or so. So I think we need to be cautious that we have some element of proportionality in this. On Tedworth's question, if we look at slide 8 carefully, at the bottom, it tells us what the pattern is over 3 years. We can produce more data from the information that's available to us for a longer period and send it to you, Chair. But this tells us that over 3 years, Gauteng 74 to 95, Limpopo 58 to 72, 72 is still inadequate. Mpumalanga 57 to 86. So there is a pattern of improvement, and it's not insignificant. So if you pass the 85% mark, you're getting pretty close to spending the money. Now, the question will then be, what's the quality of spending? And I imagine the review, as we do a little bit more work, will give us more information in that regard as well. Honorable Masondo is absolutely right, and it's in the presentation, that what we want is two types of planning. One, multi-year planning, so that you have a project pipeline, rather than this individual incremental approaches. Maybe three elements. Firstly, secondly, we want district level planning, so that the bulk and the reticulation element connect to one another. And then thirdly, we want integrated planning, the district level, but also the municipality level. And I think it's how we synchronize those three as we go forward that will give us a better and more complete picture. There's absolutely no doubt that we need to do more. And in some instances, some municipalities are doing it. So some of the bigger metros do go and raise money through their own issuance of bonds, and some of them do borrow from banks. So to that extent, the private sector is involved. But we've also had expression of interest from several sources in the private sector to make a larger contribution to this process. But of course, there's not a contribution. That's the wrong word. They want to make money out of it as well. But I suppose if they can contribute to bulking up our resources and the municipality has the ability to pay it back, then that bulking up process will be a legitimate financial process. But there are other areas, Chair, where there are initiatives in place, but also initiatives that could be put in place, like mining towns, where there's no doubt that mining companies in some areas are already making proactive contributions, in other areas could make better contributions, particularly where new licenses are being issued. So there is a government structure looking at existing mining towns where there's still a fair amount of economic activity, but also, as we all know from our experience, once a mine shuts down after 20 or 30 years, then that town generally collapses. So how we revitalize mining towns is also part of the challenge that as government we are looking at in a multi-sectoral way. But there are opportunities there to work with companies who are willing and should be willing to make a contribution to ensuring that their workforce lives in decent conditions. And both the municipality and government more generally and the company can do a fair amount in that regard, and some have done it already, as I pointed out. the issue of budget cycles and Honorable Ntaro's point, if we get the planning right, it shouldn't be a problem. But there is a disjuncture. Provincial departments and the national departments have their fiscal cycle from April to March. Municipalities have their fiscal cycle from July to June. So there's a three-month gap that has to be carefully planned for. But again, if we do, let's call it planning for a pipeline of projects, and then take into account these fiscal cycles, it shouldn't be too difficult to manage cash flow and expenditure in a way in which projects are not compromised in any serious way. On Honorable Mapulane's point about operations and maintenance, now there's two different approaches to this question. The traditional, and I think still the correct approach, is that operations is operations. The grants are for capital investment. They're not for, once you have a grant, the investment takes place, the infrastructure is in place, then it's the municipality's responsibility from the revenue it collects to actually make sure that the maintenance takes place. And the operational responsibilities of patching things up if things go wrong. There's another approach which the Honorable Member articulates, which says we need more money to actually do this. Mr. Heidenreich might have the more direct experiences about which is the correct approach. But let me wait to see what he actually says. And in relation to slide 7, we would agree that there's alignment between our own findings and what Stats South Africa says, and any number of other reports say about how access to services has improved dramatically in the last 21 years. And if we can, as some of the honorable members have said, make sure the grants are spent in the right way for the right purpose on the one hand, and on the other hand, we get value for money for what we are actually spending appropriate supervision, then we'll make an even bigger impact in the next 5 to 10 years on some of the backlog areas. So some of the officials might want to add, Chair. Let me see if they do.
Thank you, Minister. Want to add the point? Thanks.
Thank you, my Minister. Prompted me to make a remark on the maintenance and operations issue, which is a bit of a, which is a bit of a contentious issue on this side. We must remember that many of our grants are actually going to municipalities with, I will call, space realities. They are poor. They don't have the income base to generate any surpluses to maintain and operate infrastructure. Even though the equitable, the argument for National Treasury of the equitable share, I must agree with the Honourable Member that there are signs that the equitable share for that is not enough and that we need to be dealing with. National Treasury is looking for the data to support that, and we're wanting to get that information to support that. National Treasury is saying that we should rather invest putting maintenance and operations practices in place within those municipalities. But those are the municipalities with capacity constraints. Those are the municipalities that will never acquire the level of technical expertise to maintain and operate that infrastructure. So, maintenance operations might be a solution, but we also want to link it with additional capacity that we want to put in place. So it's not only about just giving a blanket card to municipalities to say your allocation is for maintenance operations. We want to incentivize probably that initiative to say, let's try and put proper maintenance and operations practices in place with some capacity of support that we want to provide. But we're still talking about schemes that are, it's almost like an emergency now, unfortunately, because of the neglect of maintenance and operations. In fact, if we don't address maintenance operations, we will get many of those similar schemes in the next 5 years. So it's almost like a must, an emergency thing that we need to be addressing in many of our municipal spaces. There are municipal spaces, we agree, that will be exploiting this, and we will try to identify those municipalities where we see that they've got the ability to do proper maintenance and operations. And we want to use the grant as a lever to assure that that's happening. The problem is we're sitting with municipalities that are not able to encourage proper maintenance operations practices, and they will have to have support. And part and parcel of that is finance to provide maintenance and operations.
Jefferson, thank you very much. I thought I should speak first to the question that's been raised about the consequences for using MIG funds for purposes other than those that are intended. So far, the consequence has been that when a municipality spends the MIG money for purposes other than intended, that municipality would fail to account for that money. And that would result in that money being, or further tranches of the grant being withheld. But what is clear is that the withholding of that money from that municipality doesn't then address the plight of those communities that are supposed to be served by that municipality. And part of what we're looking at, working together with MISA and other role players, is to see whether in fact there's a way in which once we've withheld the money, we can actually have the capacity being built in MISA to make sure that that money is actually spent on behalf of the municipality in the right way. Because it's one thing to withhold that money because the municipality is not spending it properly. But then we need to look at ways and means of making sure that that money is then spent on the right things by people other than those who are failing to do the right thing. So that's part of what is in the thinking at the moment. On matters relating to the question raised by Honourable Member Masonda on what is being done to leverage private sector investment, I'm just embellishing the points that the Minister made. I mean, part of the thinking coming out of this MIG review, this talk about MIG 2. And I think perhaps the name is not particularly helpful. But there's a distinguishing factor between what MIG 1 has been doing and what MIG 2 is proposed to do. MIG 1, which is what we have at present, has basically been focused on dealing with backlogs of infrastructure. MIG 2 then brings in a new dimension, because then that focuses on, if you like, developing a mixture of both economic and social infrastructure. That then helps the municipality to develop, sorry, to plan for better developments, build infrastructure that would help develop local economies. And the thinking is that in the context of MIG 2, there will be greater incentives for the private sector to seek to invest, to complement what local municipalities are doing or are planning to do. Because that MIG 2 would have to be linked to municipalities' ability to plan spatially, to integrate those spaces, but to also set out exactly what is it you're trying to achieve over a period of time. What social infrastructure is still required, what economic infrastructure is still required. And that then creates a space for the private sector to wish to participate in, as the Minister correctly points out, not so much in contribution, but investment in infrastructure, with the understanding that they'll be able to actually make money out of the kind of investments they will be making in those local spaces. Thank you very much. I wonder if any of my other colleagues would like to add anything.
Yes, the structures for small business that the ministers have had, the department tested the need for such structures, because early nursery, some times back, the municipality had the structures and people traded for 1 or 2 months inside those structures and simply got out of them and said, no, we are no longer, we don't want to pay rent, or else we operate outside.
These are all areas we'll have to look into, and those experiences we'll have to take account of. People will always choose the cheaper option or the no commitment option. But in that regard, Chair, one of the important things is our municipalities effectively enforcing their bylaws. So to the extent that you don't enforce the bylaws, is the extent you allow for unruly and disorganized things to actually happen. The reason municipalities have bylaws is that you want some element of order. And political leaders at a municipal level, whichever political party they belong to, have to have the political will to make sure that those bylaws are given effect to and that there are consequences if people operate outside. So that's still a task, I think, that we need to take on as a challenge. But the Honourable Member is correct. We're not going to just put up things. We don't have the money for that anyway. But we would identify needs and start formalizing the infrastructure through which our people could operate.
Okay. No, according to them, I'm not sure that there's still other questions. Since we do agree, and the Honourable Minister, that this is work in progress. And then once all consultation have been concluded and the policies have been developed, surely I think the committee will invite you and our minister to come back and have a discussion on the policy stand that you are going to take. Because it's a very important area of work, this one, because he doesn't assist also to build infrastructure, no one maintains it, it simply collapses. And we know that informal settlement also, there are a lot of some formal activities in terms of economic activities there. How do we do that? And it's a very important area of work. Knowing very well, I think the minister, that the people anyway, they are moving from those small towns, those that collapse to urban cities, urban areas and urban sprawl.
proud as a result of that. And I think there are a lot of challenges, but I think me too may assist us really to cover problems. But also consolidation and mobilizing also the private sector to get involved. I think they should. They should. If it is true that they have so much money in liquid form that is not invested anywhere, maybe they'll start investing it in the local government structure. Once government have shown the way, so deal with these issues. Of course, there always be a dilemma. I think when there's no money to pay workers, there's meek money. They're always tempted to take meek money and pay the workers. It's always a dilemma that I think the local government colleagues will be experiencing from time to time. Meek too may assist us to start addressing some of these problems. Honorable Mashuku, you wanted to make a point?
Yes, sir.
But don't forget that you are not including your cows. Your cows are there.
Okay. We don't have great areas in municipalities, all to all type of arrangement. Between the district and the municipality, according to my experience, there is communication breakdown in terms of delivery of services. What is the plan of the department to bridge that gap so that there is no duplication of services in the municipality, between municipality and the district?
So from our knowledge, what the Honourable Member is saying is certainly an issue in some places, in other places it works well. So theoretically and legally there's a clear demarcation of roles and responsibilities between districts and locals. But as we approach 15 years of democratic local government, like we are reviewing the MIG, I think we need to review some of those arrangements that we put in place as well and check what the concrete experiences are showing, and also ask ourselves some tougher questions about do those powers and functions change. You remember we've talked about shared services in the context of back to basics, so that the right kind of capability can get to a geographic area even if a local can't actually afford it. It's still a valid concept, but it's something that needs to be firmed up. There would be some that would argue that there's no need for districts in some parts of the country because the locals are quite strong and they can actually manage on their own. And then what the Honourable Member is saying about communication, but more importantly coordination of their efforts doesn't work as it should work, or we expect it to work in all of the places as well. So this is certainly an area that we want to review, and again we'll let you know when and how we start the process and you know, what our thinking is in this regard as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, colleagues. It seems they have dealt with the issue of the MIG and the report, and I think the point that Honorable Mashuku is making is also was made by the MEC from Limpopo, that there are areas where districts are weaker than the local authority, local municipalities. But because of the nature of work, it's very difficult for them to take initiative, must wait for a district that has no capacity. Then the local municipalities, they raise these issues. And maybe that the minister also is considering this matter, because otherwise it can frustrate the work of those municipalities that are a little bit well equipped to start assisting us in some of the issues that we are always worried about. I thought, colleagues, you are fine now, unless you do have some areas that you want to pursue. One of which saying, well, you are fine now. You are part of DEPA? 2015. You are happy now?
No, I'm not.
Okay. 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 I thought you must be happy to be part of a metro. You like poverty. That is a bigger problem. That's a bigger problem. Okay, let us proceed, colleagues, and give you the second presentation on the progress made on the back to basics. It's a very interesting one, and I think we'll have a discussion on this and see what else we can do. We should invite then the department, whoever is going to make a presentation on the minister. Honorable Minister may want to introduce the subject matter.
Thank you, Chairperson. When this administration got going in June last year, we thought it's important to evaluate where local government and municipalities stood in the evolutionary process that government institutions go through anywhere in the world, but particularly in our own country. And increasingly, Chair, those that operate at the local government level, both officials and public office bearers, are at the front line of the experience that people have of government. In other words, that interface between government and citizens is very sharply focused on those who work within municipalities. It's interesting when you look at public opinion surveys, people like ourselves who operate at a national level have credibility levels somewhere between 55% and 65%. Provincial public office bearers somewhere between 50% and below 60%. But local government public office bearers somewhere around 32% to 35% in so-called approval rating. And that is because there is often the public perception that all of the challenges that they have are challenges as a result of things that are done or not done by a municipality. But the reality is, as we all know, that whether it's a national project or a provincial project, at the end of the day, it happens within a municipal space. People will experience it within that local context as well. And all we are doing here is to reinforce the importance of local government. Secondly, that the Back to Basics campaign was about understanding that reality well on the one hand, but also putting in place projects and programs that will help municipalities to function better, help national government to perform its constitutional role together with provinces to monitor what is happening, but also to support municipalities where it is necessary. So there's various sections in Chapter 7 of the Constitution which require provincial and national government to actually support municipalities. And those provisions were put in 1996, particularly because we understood at the time that we were actually building an entirely new system of government out of the fragments of the apartheid era and the kind of transition process that went through in the 94 to 2000 period in our own history. So what we've certainly achieved through Back to Basics is a greater awareness in provinces and national government level of the important role that municipalities play. Secondly, as I said earlier on, the importance of working with municipalities and seeing them as points of integration of governance, of financial management, of service delivery, and of institutional development as well. What Mr. Fawzi will do on our behalf is to make the presentation and tell you what progress we've made and what we intend to do over the next 6 to 9 months to continue to enhance the Back to Basics program. Thank you.
Thank you very Trudeau first before you come in, Minister, that I do think is still our challenge, generally, not for local government, is the whole issue of special development. I just think that we are not achieving integrating communities. 21 years down the line, it is worse now. You can see how, because if we can't integrate communities, we can't start building a non-racial society. We can also start building a community with solidarity, social solidarity, capitalizing on the capital and the social capital that is there. I think it's something that COPTIC says with other departments, we should really try to push in the next 5 years. Because I think it's a bigger problem, generally, is that communities are not integrated. In fact, they're still the same communities. And I think it's a bigger problem because then it will take longer than expected to start having a South African identity among every person in South Africa. And then also have a sort of solidarity that crosses all the lines. All the fault lines in South Africa should be crossed by some solidarity, social solidarity. I think it's a bigger challenge that we are facing. We must address that. I think COPTA should also try one way or another to assist municipalities to start addressing it. Our failure to do so, I think, would have a bigger problem. And we know that kids at school are integrated, but they're not integrated in terms of the social interaction. Only at school, only where they're integrated. Outside schools, generally, there's nothing that is happening. I think we should address this. It's a bigger challenge. I think all research would indicate that we have failed to integrate these communities. I think we have to be attended to. Fossi, I'm told that you will be one that taking us to back to basic.
Thanks, Jefferson, and honorable members. The presentation will cover those five areas in terms of reflecting on progress that is made since the launch last year, September. So just as a background, Chair, you'll remember that COCTA, we did that comprehensive analysis of the state of local government, and we categorized municipalities into those three broad categories: those that are doing well, those that have potential to do well, and dysfunctional. And since that launch, as the Minister has indicated, I think there's been traction generally in terms of the back to basics. In government side, MECs and premiers are reporting regularly. In fact, back to basics is a standard agenda item in all those meetings. So in every meeting, the premiers and the MECs report. And we've also seen varied support plans emerging from initial COCTA department in terms of the support they're providing to municipalities. We've also introduced monthly reporting for municipalities. And on an average, about 180 municipalities have been consistently reporting against the performance indicators. And overall, if you look at the past 6 months, about 236 municipalities have reported on their performance. And as I indicated earlier, Chair, we have also received private sector support in terms of assisting and working, partnering with government to achieve the back to basics objectives. These are some of those offers: Telkom in terms of IT systems and data development, Old Mutual. They've identified about 20 municipalities that they'll be supporting around building capable local government institutions, project management support from the banking council. because what is emerging from the reports, that the monthly reports that we're receiving from municipalities, that it's still early to detect significant trends and impact. But we have seen movements in certain areas. Municipalities that are owing ESCOM, the commitments that they've made, the support they are receiving, support to those municipalities that are receiving disclaimers, and so on. And in the work that we've done, most of the action plans that were developed for municipalities have been incorporated into the IDPs and the budget of municipalities and are currently implemented. On slide 6, these are some of the key sort of areas that of progress that we've worked on. Working with the provinces, we're looking at the scientific instrument that we will use for assessing level of performance in terms of those categories of municipalities. We've standardized the reporting templates. We are also reviewing the whole municipal performance indicators that are required in terms of the systems act, section 46, 47, and 48, in terms of reporting by municipalities. We will be coming back to portfolio committee on those indicators. We are consulting currently with the provinces and the municipalities on that. We're also finalizing monitoring and reporting ICT system that will assist us to get information more effectively and manage it. The second area is an area around the policy review. I think that the discussion in the last session here around the role of districts, we have started also looking at this area. We have met with those people that are Water Service Authority to look at what are the challenges they are experiencing, what support they can get from government, but also to look at broadly reviewing the whole issue of distribution of powers and functions between the district and the local. We are also looking at another, we started research and studies to look at this issue that you've raised around spatial integration and transformation. Our approach is to look at specific areas, spatial areas, where we can actually achieve this spatial contract, where we bring all the different key stakeholders, but also look at how you then crowd in investment from the private sector in particular spaces. We want to roll it out and pilot it in specific areas. We're also, through the IMTT, looking at accelerating the integrated planning and delivery of basic services, particularly focusing around project implementation. So I think the spheres were able to outline all the plans and integrate those plans, but the challenge is actually at an implementation plan. How do you bring these three spheres to work together at an implementation plan? We have also supported quite a number of municipalities in terms of the Section 154 of the Constitution. These are some of those municipalities: Mogalakwena, Nelson Mandela, Buffalo City, and also interventions in terms of Section 139, Magana, and the latest one being Old Soran. So provinces have also invoked 129 in quite a number of municipalities, and this slide reflects some of those current 129 interventions. KZN is actually, there's two municipalities from KZN in the slide, Indaga and Imbabazane. We are working with these municipalities to ensure that the action plans of back to basics are also incorporated in the plans of these 129 interventions to ensure that there is clear exit strategy, but also sustainability of the interventions and the work that is done through these interventions. Our support packages also continue to monitor the hotspots. There are quite a number of emerging challenges from municipalities, as we have also seen in the newspapers, Pulukwane and many others. So we continue to support these municipalities. So the next few slides, these are areas which remain key areas of concern, but also as a department we continue to focus, particularly now as we will be looking at the next phase of Back to Basics. If we look at in terms of the five pillars of Back to Basics, the first one being putting people first. The processes and systems for citizens' engagement are generally weak in many municipalities, particularly those falling between the last two categories. And largely, this is due to lack of plans and also functionality of your ward committees. And many of these municipalities don't even conduct any citizen satisfaction surveys just to assess the concerns and views of the citizens that they serve. On the issues of your services and infrastructure, the major challenges that are remaining there is issues relating to aging infrastructure, which to a large extent leads to service failures. And the many municipalities, particularly your small, weak municipalities, have challenges in terms of technical capacity around planning, project management, even procurement of infrastructure, and the management of the whole supply chain, management of these processes. The capacity of the Water Service Authority to respond to water challenges, which in instances can also lead to disasters. On issues of good governance, what is emerging here is that concerning stability and weaknesses in governance remain the primary causes of poor service delivery in many municipalities. The challenges generally around the enforcement of bylaws, and there's also a clear correlation between senior management vacancy rates and a lack of functionality or dysfunctionality in some of those municipalities. The issues of traditional leadership, they remain a challenge in terms of establishing those partnerships with municipalities. And the issue of sector departments working and participating in IDP processes at municipal level. On issues of financial management, these are some of the remaining challenges. The issues of servicing of debt, particularly to bulk suppliers, the tariffs that are not cost reflective, challenges around the collection rate, billing systems, and the issue of debt owed to municipalities, particularly by government, still remains a challenge. And the culture of payment by communities. On issues of audit, what is coming out from the report from the AG, the key areas is issues around leadership oversight, lack of internal controls and accountability and consequence management on some of the findings of the AG. On building institutional capabilities, which is the last pillar, we've also observed that municipalities with weaknesses in governance, corporate management functions such as your financial management, HR, or your supply chain processes, they tend to also experience challenges in the delivery of services. There's also a challenge around the legal capacity in many municipalities, which results in many cases in numerous litigations and escalating legal costs. And also the challenge around middle management, not adequately having the right expertise and competences. There's also a limited capacity for forward planning and implementation capability, which I think is an issue that was raised also in the previous discussion. And there is a reality share of small municipalities' inability to attract particularly critical skills because of the putting plans in place to ensure that we focus on specific areas that will make more impact than trying to resolve every challenge that municipalities are facing. So we want to focus the first step on the issues supporting the outcomes of the municipal amalgamation process, which will be announced by the MDP in terms of that process that the MDP is currently busy with. The other one is the issue of accelerating integrated planning and delivery of the basic services. So the work that has been started by the IMTT, we want to ensure that those chief sector departments that are responsible for those basic services do work in an integrated but also deliver in an integrated way. We will, as I indicated in the chair, we don't want to focus on everything, but you want to zoom in on specific sort of areas of challenge. Particularly, if you take your dysfunctional municipalities, you will observe that in many of them, there are those generic systemic problems, whether it's weaknesses in the human resource management, issues around supply chain, infrastructure procurement, and financial management. We want to zoom in into those specific things so that we're able then to make specific sort of targets in terms of those areas. Also, strengthening the community participation and local government accountability to the citizens through mechanisms for enabling citizens to raise their complaints but also engage effectively with the municipalities. This is the issue that has also been covered in the last presentation here on the acceleration of water, roads, sanitation, and so on. Tackling corruption. We want to focus on the last two categories in particular, your dysfunctional municipalities and those that are at risk, to ensure that if we are to measure progress in the next phase, we want to move all your dysfunctional municipalities out of that category and ensure that those that are at risk do not regress. And then this, I think it will give us a sense of movement in terms of visible and positive experience of citizens of local government in terms of the challenges that they've been experiencing. One of the areas that we'll be focusing on is also critically looking at the capacity of provincial COPTA departments, because these are the departments that are more closer in terms of supporting municipalities. And we've observed that many of these departments also have serious challenges in terms of capacity and skills, but also the ability to actually support the municipality. So that's the progress. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
If I have to, Chair, I will. I can say that we, as part of preparing for the next phase of Back to Basics, we have crystallized our business case for Back to Basics. And based on that, we have initiated, in fact, we are now concluding a restructuring effort within our organization based on a crystallized business case. And what we will be expecting provincial departments to do is to align themselves. In a sense, they will need to restructure themselves as part of crowding in the capacities they need and also streamlining their work in a manner that enables them to support municipalities very effectively, in the same way as we are doing to support both provinces as well as municipalities in that. And we believe that getting them to in a sense, align ourselves in that way, the next phase of Back to Basics should be able to take us some steps forward. Thank you very much.
Okay. Colleagues, NABA would have raised the issue of forensic report. That this forensic report is always important, that it are given to council for discussion and endorsement on that issue. And I think they would have raised that because it's another issue to do forensic reports, investigation. After the report is there, it's not presented anywhere. It simply becomes a report general. No one knows exactly. It was not presented to a council for a decision making on that area, or rejected or approved. It seems an issue that also has been raised on that issue. And hopefully honorable members are going to raise some of the issues that they have been observing as they also conduct their own oversight function. Honorable members, yeah, and then allow me to take time and raise issues. Honorable Shemwa, and then now.
Thank you, Chair. One will welcome the report. I just have two issues, Chair. The first one is the two basics. Largely, well, I know that you're going to elections, and this is preface what I want to say with that. So obviously that sort of will maybe cause a glitch in it when the new term starts. And so maybe the question I want to ask is not really going to assist back to basics now, but should be a consideration in the new term. And it speaks to the capacity of councillors. I know that we have gone to bring a lot back to basics in ensuring that the municipality is an institution, it is capacitated, and we are doing schools audits and everything else, and we're really zooming into that to ensure that the administrative part of the municipality is functional. But it's incomplete in the absence of capacity for councillors. And I think this obviously can't not something that the department can do, but it also speaks to political parties. So it's the people that they are deploying to councillors, where they have the capacity and the know-how and the skills to actually grapple and deal with what municipal governance is all about, because it will become a stumbling block. And I think it is something that must be looked at, and we must be able to model, say, how do we arrive at a point where councillors are in sync in terms of understanding and their work with what the back to basics does, as opposed to the niceties of the rhetoric which would accompany the rubric that the politicians, but it goes to the responsibilities which they carry. And I think we must be able to find something that I'm sure it's not something for now. I mean, these councillors are going out, and, but with the new councils, I think we must be able to do that. And political parties must be able to take part in that as well. Chair, the other one speaks to that issue, which was I'm not going to be able to refer to slides because the presentation I have is all slide number 6. They've all listed 6, but it spoke to that issue of harmonization of the relationships between traditional leaders and municipality, and to find what challenges are there so that we can be able to deal with them, Chair, so that we don't have a situation whereby not seeing eye to eye becomes a stumbling block. So what are the areas of concern with regards to that? If there is, then what progress to make with that? I just wanted to zoom in on that particular one. And Chair, the final one would spoke to dysfunctional municipalities. Which of those municipalities, if they are probably outside the scope, what is really listed there in terms of the intervention, so that we can also, as a portfolio committee, be in a position to refocus our oversight to the municipalities that have been termed dysfunctional, and maybe to understand, to get an understanding in the same page of the department when they refer to dysfunctional municipality, what characterizes dysfunctional, so we can be able to assist the oversight process best.
Thank you, Anabunda.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I don't have a question, but mine is only congratulation to the department and the minister about back to basics, because it created a lot of improvement in local municipalities. You can see now there's a good fruit that initiated from municipalities. Everything's now it's going well from all municipalities that we're seeing from the oversight. We see that everything.
I think the first phase is more than in addressing the issues of functional municipalities, but it is also there to deal with the challenges in terms of the apartheid legacy. Chairperson, I think you've also mentioned in your remarks as the presentation was done, in terms of your special development and what is it that we need to be looking at these issues and integrating communities. My question will be in terms of Western Cape province, because I also believe that we are not a federal state. As much as the department is doing a marvelous work, his hands on, there are good results already. When we are doing our oversight, we can see that indeed there are gains already. There are strides, I mean, that you are making as a department already. But my question would be, where is Western Cape? Are they part of this? Because you see the things that sometimes we read about in newspapers, like the article that was there in Mail and Guardian on the 15th of July, and the heading was Apartheid's Big Bitter Legacy Taints Cape's New Urban Removals, whereby about 800,000 people were removed from the area where they were residing to an outside area about 35 kilometers outside Cape Town.
Mashuk. Honorable Mashuk.
On slide 6, putting people first, you know, I'm from Rustenburg Municipality, Ward 28, in the northwest. We are the only ward in this country that doesn't have a ward committee by intention. Because the ward goes under my organization. So there is no intention whatsoever by the Speaker's office or the mayor or whoever is obliged to launch that since 2011. They want a 50-50 sort of representation. But we are proudly saying that to basics, we put people first, regardless of political affiliation. This is the situation since 2011. And the community is intending taking the minister to court. But all in all, my question is there any measuring instrument which determine whether those monthly or by monthly reports are the true reflection of what is happening on the ground? We are just filling the template and say this is what is happening, given the stage of service delivery protests which are continuing in our communities, so that we can measure whether we have put the people first or not. Thank you.
Honorable Mapula.
Thank you, Chair. And thanks for the presentation. I think my observation, Chair, is that indeed the approach of back to basis is beginning to gain traction. I think it is gaining traction both in the municipal sphere and also in other sectors. And I think that it's a concept that has captured the imagination of many progressives in the country. You know, I saw the National Congress of
National Union of Mine Workers had as part of their theme, back to basics. So the extent to which this concept is capturing the imagination of everybody across the country can actually be felt, you know, when everybody is talking about the concept of back to basics. I think all credit can go to the minister in terms of conceptualizing this. But of course, there is a lot of work that needs to be done. I don't think that in a space of 12 months we can expect to see the complete turnaround. But indeed, I think something has been done. I was looking at the presentation, because the presentation that we received yesterday is much more detailed than the one that we are getting today. You see, it has been summarized today's one. Yesterday's one is much more detailed. It talks to the reports and the actual issues that are emanating from the reports. But I guess there's a good reason to summarize it, probably because of time. But there are, like the presentation is also saying, that there are still concerns. If you look at page slide number 6 of the summarized presentation on financial management, and I think concerns around this area of municipal work will continue to be there. Maybe before I make my point, I must just say, it's a pity the Municipal Demarcation Board did not understand, Honorable Minister, where you're coming from in the proposal to rationalize some of the municipalities to merge them. Because I thought the consideration was to address the question of financial viability, which is something that was raised before, to say that some of the municipalities, if left as they are, they won't be able to supply the kind of services enjoyed in the rest of the other municipalities. Because the base, the tax base is quite so small that they won't be able to make whatever necessary impact. Even the money that is coming from the municipal infrastructure grant, it's so small that it can only qualify for one project per financial year. There are municipalities which debt less than 20 million, which is simply sufficient to construct one road, not even water infrastructure and so forth. So the idea behind the rationalization of those municipalities was around specifically to address some of the emerging concerns around financial management, which is a pity that some of the key proposals could not be entertained. But I just want to find out if are the mechanism, for instance, introduced on, especially on the issue of debt owed by government departments, because that is something that can easily be resolved. I don't know whether there's some mechanism that has been introduced to make sure that some of these concerns, which are almost serving as low-hanging fruits, can be quickly attended to, so that we address some of the concerns that are emerging. The last issue for me, Chair, is the question of capacity, which is arising also as part of the concerns. I don't know whether the department would want to appraise us as to, in view of its reorganization and restructuring, the extent to which they are beginning to position MISA to attend to some of the capacities that are the technical capacities
of municipalities. Whether are you able to, or are you at a point where you have finally arrived at a solution to address the question of capacity, which the presentation is highlighting. Lastly, Chair, cooperative governance. We have always understood it not only to refer to municipalities, but to refer to the three spheres, including provinces. But I don't know whether it's going to be done now. Maybe I might be putting the cart before the horse, but I think it's about time that we begin to ask questions around to what extent also are we going to start looking at provincial governments and provincial departments. Because we should not depart from an assumption that says everything is well and good at the level of the provinces. Because I can tell you that that assumption will be very, very wrong to make. I think at some point we need to zoom in to not only the Department of Cooperative Governance in the provinces, but at some point the entirety of provincial administration. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, the Tech. Honorable Master.
Yes, Chair. The
Tech. Let us allow Babu.
Okay, the basics process. Should we be focusing as well on the training of municipal managers, that is management? Because my experience in the last 8 years at local levels, councillors, the department has been doing its best to train councillors and have more workshops for them. But in spite of that, these municipalities are still struggling to come up. Now, as part of the back to basics process, should we be focusing more on the emphasis be put more on the training of municipal managers and their middle managers, because they are the ones that must make things happen at municipal level. Not necessarily politicians. Politicians are there just to manage the political oversight. But people who should actually be implementing programs for service delivery, I should think that these are management staff. Shouldn't the emphasis be more put on the training of this municipal staff? That is the question I'm asking.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Chair. There is also under your slide 2, all the slides are number 6, 2 to slide 2. Yeah, that's page 4. Among all this concern, I hear this concern, but there's also issues that we have picked up even in the oversight in Northwest. The issue of standards. I just want to know what extent that standard has caused a problem in some of the service delivery methods, where there was a previous agreement when the road was not handed over to Sandra of a pipe to run along that along the line or in the fence. In a space that is not going to be utilized at all, but along the fence of that road, which might cut the cost quite quite high. But with Sandra coming in and taking over that road, she wanted to divert everything, not even wanted to agree or to be engaged in a pipe of water running next to that road. We also pick up the issue of traditional leaders, that in other areas, there were traditional leaders that they said, if you want to bring services here, you want to build a tent here, it must start with me. I must be paid some royalties and I must be paid this and that. How far are such problems? And in other areas, our farmers, of course, will say that if the pipe is going to run across my farm, I'm not going to allow that, not unless I'm paid. Also, things like royalties, they want this money or that money. As a result, the services get delayed, or the community becomes the victims of it. I just want to know in the department how far or how difficult is this problem, so that we might find a way how to address it, particularly the one of Sandra, because it has seemed like it's quite arrogant, not even being undermining previous agreements and do not even want to be engaged on such issues. Thank you.
Well, we will invite the department to comment on the minister, the direction of this issue, any other questions. But the point that I wanted just to also comment on it is really a question of technology, in my view. I guess that in the 21st century, at a certain point, you must have a technology that will verify all the reports that are given to us. One way is that we have a view, overview of the country, where development is taking place, what are the shortcomings. Because I do think that a lot of challenges that are going to take us some time. I don't think we are going to resolve everything in the next 2 months or 2 years. Yeah, but I think the foundation has been laid. It's just technologically laid. I think I would be very happy. Director General, that one day we are able to zoom in Nelson Mandela when we are in Swan. We are in Swan, we have to zoom in there, independent of the report that you get from the department, from other structures of government. And then when there's a problem in my local town in Alexandria, we are able also to zoom in, really. Somewhere where is that, not the present call center, but something like that, where people come in, even if they call and say, Director General, there's a problem of the potholes here, they've been here for the last 5 months. Even when the report comes and say they're closed, sometimes they're not closed, very truly speaking. It's just a report, a system that will be able to, at the national level, because local government, it seems, already agree that it's a very important sphere, that we are now working on it with a back-to-back basis. But sometimes I do think that some of the reports from some of local authorities, not all of them, and that little bit not correct sometimes. A lot of exaggerations. Sometimes those residents who sit there, they know that, but it's not true that this road, this town now is clean, they've removed the garbage in all entry points, because we know that all entry points or entry areas in our township, we are welcomed by piles and piles of garbage, general. I know the exact that when I enter Santin, I won't find garbage and garbage of piles and piles of garbage somewhere. But I know exactly when I enter Alexandra, first thing that is going to welcome me is dead everywhere. But in other areas we are told that no, it's there. In fact, when we are going for oversized function, when you enter Hakala, I think it's Hakala, you are welcomed by pies and pies. But I saw the report that was presented to National. It says, now we have dealt with this one, now it's clean. But you go there, you find something is not clean at all. It seems there are some problem. I just guess that the department, because to drive this, I think will take us many years. Whether we are here or not is immaterial, but I think the system must be there where we can verify some of this information, but also that the minister can say, but you are not right, and Honorable MEC, in this area, there's a big problem. What you are saying is happening is not happening, because I just think unless we got some system that we can push things a little bit and then nudge people to work and persuade them where we can persuade them, and just use carrot and stick. I think National Department should be able to do so, use some carrot and sticks to ensure that we really work out some of these issues. Of course, these are our colleagues at the local level. We understand their problem. But we need to know what is happening in many towns. And there are a lot of rural towns that are very poor. And then surely I think we should have some system there. I'm not sure it can happen with technology. I think first we're talking about technology that we are developing to address some of these things. I think the sooner we really start working on it, just to get information correctly, I think would be very useful for them. Let me invite the department to comment. Even when you sit here, Director General, I must be able to say in his rural area, what do you call your rural area? Where? Wachoyan, yeah. When you're in your office here, you should zoom in there because you are from the rural family and see what is this in Duna doing. There are a lot of things in Duna. Director General is in Duna. You must zoom in there, Director General, and see what is this in Duna doing there. Well, thank you very much. Let us take
that. Chairperson, thank you very much. Perhaps I should start by commenting on the issue of technology that you've raised, and say that as you would have seen in the presentation, we've made reference to the support that we are receiving from Telkom at this point in time. They're helping us to put together that capability. We have data sets that are sitting in various places in the department and elsewhere in government that we're trying to put together in that way. Technology is quite expensive, as you probably know, and we are in very difficult financial times. But that does not dissuade us from putting together whatever it is that we can as part of, in a sense, putting together a launch pad to give us that kind of ultimate capability you're talking about. But in the next few months, we expect that with the support that we are getting from Telkom, we will certainly be edging very close to what we're saying. We will keep you posted as to what progress we are making. Certainly that kind of capability is what will keep us in the driving seat as COPTA, and we recognize that. We want to be able to access data sets that are in systems that have been operated by certain departments like water and sanitation and the like. And certainly that capability, once it is put in place, we will be in the commanding seat and we'll be able to, in a sense, verify whatever information is being given to us. But we must always remember that technology of the sort that we're talking about also depends on what data is loaded onto it, and that data is loaded by people. So it doesn't mean that it's going to run on its own. So part of what we have done in the first phase of our Back to Basics implementation, we had put together provincial task teams, which teams have been visiting municipalities on a regular basis. And in our revised organizational structure, we have in fact made provision for structures that will be doing hands-on monitoring at municipal level, properly staffed with people at the right level, with the level of skill that is required, and where such skills are lacking, we have committed ourselves to providing training to people, to making sure that they are able to collate the information we need. But more than that, it's about getting to support municipalities in the best possible way to make sure that we unleash execution capacity where it is required. So the fusion of technology as well as the capacities that we're talking about will certainly set us on the path that you've described, Chairperson. There are questions that I will ask my other colleagues to comment on, but let me say that on matters relating to the questions raised by Honorable Mashoko, we have 4,277 wards across the country. We've undertaken a study looking at the functionality of these wards. And that study has told us that many ward committee structures are not functioning well. And we've committed ourselves to a program of supporting these ward committees. Up to now, we've provided support to over two-thirds of them. And now that we know that the wards, ward number 8 in Rustenburg, 28, is it? Okay. We shall certainly put a microscope on that ward and make sure that...
My microscope dissolved in fact the ward.
No. No, the ANC was dictated in the town of 8%. Then they don't want to launch a community site, not a political site. They want site from the ANC, site from the community. ANC is part of the community.
Well, I suppose there are elements of the questions that you've posed which are best left to the minister to deal with. Certainly. But that's where I was, that we will place that area under a microscope. We will investigate that matter. What is very clear, though, is that the legislation actually enjoins us to make sure that ward committee structures are not politicized. They are supposed to be community structures. And we will have to make sure that that objective is, in fact, realized. There were questions also raised about what mechanisms have been put in place to assist municipalities that are being owed money by government departments. In this regard, I would like to report that the Department of Public Works is working very closely with us, and they've engaged services of a service provider that's been looking into invoices from municipalities that were in dispute. And in fact, those invoices have been reduced quite significantly. And part of the debt that was indicated as owing to municipalities has in fact been whittled down, because there were a number of inaccuracies that have in fact been cut down. But some monies remain owing to municipalities, and government departments continue to pay those invoices that have now been verified. We will have to give you an update, perhaps in writing if you wish, Chairperson, as to what is the level of payment, or to what extent has the debt been serviced, what is remaining, and what are the issues that are standing in the way of those invoices being settled. That information we can make available to you, Chairperson. The Chief Executive Officer of MISA might need to just give you the garlic flavor of the thinking already in place with regards to how MISA is being repositioned. But it may be necessary for a dedicated session to be arranged so that we come together with MISA to share with the committee what is the new thinking MISA will no longer operate in the same old way, certainly, in the context of the business case that we've developed on back to basics. But as I said, the chief executive officer can give you some garlic flavor on that. You will have seen in the presentation, we've made reference to the need to support provincial COCTAs. Even in my own closing comment, I talked about the fact that we've repositioned ourselves, we've reviewed our structure and organization, and that we expect the same to happen at provincial level. In fact, one of the areas of focus that we've identified, which we will start putting in place subject to availability of resources, is a dedicated area of focus to support provincial COCTAs, to make sure that they are properly equipped and capacitated to support municipalities. As we speak, we are collaborating with the National Treasury, with its component, government component called GTAC. We will in fact be undertaking an evaluation study of the capacity of provincial COCTAs to fulfill the role that they have to play. But I realize that the question has looked beyond just the provincial COCTAs to look at how do we make sure that provincial administrations as a whole that have a role to play in the municipality, that in fact they do fulfill that role under the rubric of cooperative governance. That is certainly an area we are looking to expand our work into. But you will have seen that the Constitution is relatively silent on the role that national government actually has in relation to provincial governments. But we have to find very creative ways of making sure that we mobilize provincial administrations. What we are beginning to see is that as we receive provincial reports from in our min-max, that back to basics has already started playing that role of mobilizing the entirety of government at provincial level to start playing a role in supporting municipalities in their various ways, but also of making sure that back to basics is not just a COCTA affair, but a government-wide affair that that actually mobilizes everybody to play a role at local government level. I'll pause here for now and defer to my colleagues to tackle some of the questions.
Thanks, sir. Maybe just on the issues here of technology. One of the solutions that we're also looking at is related to the point that you're raising on community feedback mechanism. It's an SMS sort of system where we can get sort of feedback from communities. We're also looking at social media, Facebook and so on, but we're able then to interact directly with communities. On the issue of provincial COCTAs, maybe just to add one point, there is an accountability relationship which we need to manage as national to the provincial one. As much as we have a concurrent function, they also need to account on the support they are providing to municipalities in terms of their 1647 reports. So we must assess those reports in relation to what is it that they have done. So part of this process is to review their support plans. What capacity do they have? What skills do they have? In the same way as we are monitoring municipalities, we want to monitor them to actually also. When they submit that Section 47, we can also verify it against the state of their municipalities in those provinces. The question around that was raised on also need to train managers. I think
we need to look at it firstly, different in terms of what is the what is required by law. Because in the first instance, municipalities must employ people with the right skills, right qualifications and competences in those positions. That's the first basis. So if you want a CFO, you must get a CFO that has the right skill. But you can look at how you capacitate the administration as a whole, even other positions in terms of how you support. But you need to professionalize the system first. And we can't compromise on that part in terms of ensuring that particularly your top positions, the senior management position, people with the right skills are employed into those positions. On the list of dysfunctional municipalities, the presentation did not cover everything because we did present it previously to the portfolio committee, which the one that we did, it included the list of those municipalities, but I think we can submit that.
We can update it.
Yeah. Yes, we can update it based on also the work that we've done, but submit it to the I think the other questions are more political, which I think I'm not sure if I have the authority to respond to some, but the questions that you asked, I think that generally there's a good mood and support from the councillors and officials of the municipality. In fact, there's more requests for support that we're receiving now for assistance in many areas. So we will continue, I think, to work with municipalities in this area. The issue of forensic report, part of the work that we're doing here is we've done an audit of all the forensic reports. And we want to ensure then that those municipalities are actually, the minister will write to those mayors and the political leadership to ensure those matters are taken to the council, and provinces must monitor implementation of those decisions. Yeah. On the issues of traditional leadership, I think it would be difficult at this point to talk about the extent of this problem. But we know that there are challenges, as the Honourable Member has indicated, where there's no cooperation between traditional leaders and the councillors. The serious sort of tension and then issues of development. It's not an issue that is uppermost in the agenda and engagement between councillors and traditional leaders. So issues of payment and so on would be raised. Even in many instances, municipalities that are particularly in your rural and traditional communities, they're not able to generate revenue from those areas in terms of rates and so on. Because it's traditional areas, and in many cases, they are regarded as indigent areas. But you'll find that in certain areas, there is a flat rate that is charged to some of the where there's a good relationship between councillors and the traditional leaders. So it would differ from area to area, but I think it is a growing concern in terms of there's a need to really improve, but define more clearly the role of traditional leaders in development working with municipalities so that we're able to strengthen those partnerships.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to the question about MISA, historically MISA has focused its technical support to municipalities in the form of providing engineers and town planners to work in municipalities and recruiting trainees and paying them stipends and locating them in municipalities. Currently we have approximately 50 engineers and town planners located and providing support in about 120 different municipalities across the country. And undoubtedly, in many instances, those engineers and town planners are providing a valuable service in those municipalities. But we are concerned about some aspects of the support that we're providing and looking at changing the support in some ways. With regard to the engineers and town planners, we're worried that often we're creating dependency in the municipalities. Some of our engineers have been in municipalities for more than 3 years now, having started under the Sierra Zamanji program, and we don't see the municipalities making progress in terms of hiring their own engineers. So we need to start also looking at the underlying reasons why municipalities don't have engineers and town planners. If MISA can hire engineers and town planners and place them in municipalities, it raises the question as to why can't the municipalities hire them themselves? Because clearly, engineers and town planners are willing to work in those municipalities because they're willing to work there for MISA. Is it a problem, for example, of the recruitment and retention policies of the municipalities? So we want to start looking into that area as well. And then we also, as MISA, want to go beyond our traditional area of just providing engineering support and also look at other aspects of municipal infrastructure, such as planning and procurement of municipal infrastructure and financing of municipal infrastructure and providing support in those areas. So, for example, in the area of infrastructure procurement, we're now working with National Treasury's Chief Procurement Office to look at putting in place national framework contracts for certain types of municipal infrastructure goods and services against which municipalities would be able to place orders without going on their own procurement processes and thereby get better costs and better efficiencies than is currently the case. We're also working with National Treasury to finalize the development of a body of knowledge on infrastructure procurement and the development of minimum competency requirements for officials in municipalities on how to do link to that body of knowledge to improve infrastructure procurement, the quality of it within municipalities, as well as infrastructure planning within municipalities. And we're also talking to the PPP unit of National Treasury Chairperson with regard to the earlier discussion about mobilizing more private sector finance for municipal infrastructure. We are looking with PPP units and National Treasury about the possibility of exploring things such as putting in place a single PPP for municipalities to participate in for municipal infrastructure, for example, for water treatment plants, so that each municipality doesn't have to do its own PPP process. So, in a nutshell, we're looking at expanding MISA's work into other areas related to municipal infrastructure beyond the traditional focus on engineering support.
Chairperson, just before the minister comes in to tackle the questions that we would have omitted to tackle, those that we would have delegated upward. I'd just like to say that the training programs that we currently have, including the one that Old Mutual has committed to support us with, focuses on leadership, which is both at the political level as well as the administrative level. So there's recognition of the need to deal with leadership at both levels. Perhaps the part that I think the minister can speak more intelligibly on is whether the political, well, I suppose I can say that it would be most welcome if political parties were to deploy people with the requisite skills and capacities in municipalities. But whether we can compel them to do so, I'm not certain, but perhaps the minister can share a thought or two on that. Minimum competency requirements for the deployment of candidates as councillors. Yeah, perhaps it's a fascinating thought that one can go into. It's easier to do it in instances where people are appointed, but not as easy where people are going to be elected through a popular mandate. But we can, look at that, and I'm sure the minister will guide us on how best to take that bit of work forward. Back to basics, cut across the entire geographic space of the country. That includes the Western Cape. Perhaps I must admit I've been remiss not to have seen the article that the Honourable Member has referred to. But we are actually working in the Western Cape already, implementing back to basics. Sometimes even together with the provincial government, we're working very closely. As the minister will be able to share with you what we're doing together with them in Otswana, for an example, and a number of other areas where municipalities are in distress, requiring some support. We'll certainly be working with them in those areas. I suppose this is a convenient time, Chairperson, to then allow the minister to conclude.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
You see how I get delegated to do that. Thank you, Chair. Your point around Chair, the spatial development, spatial integration, what other colleagues, including the Honourable Member Tembo, on integrated communities, how do we overcome the apartheid legacy? This is still a big issue in South Africa. It's still a big issue in South Africa. And we need to talk a lot more about it. We need to graphically understand a lot more about it. In other words, do or undertake some kind of, only the word picture is in my mind, but let's see images of how development is taking place, for example, in the bigger conurbations that we have in South Africa. And one of the projects that we want to launch is to take a selection of municipalities, say two metros, two secondary cities, and so on, and see what is the relationship between spatial development plans, which are supposed to aim for integration, and the actual practice of development. And this is where your point about carrots and sticks comes in. At the moment, we're not using even the sticks we have. And the grants that we offer, whilst notionally conditional, don't have sufficient conditionality to change behaviors. Because your incentives are supposed to be designed in a way in which you can influence behavior. And in this instance, it would be which proposal coming from a private developer would you approve or not approve. But secondly, even if it's a government department that wants to put in a particular facility in a municipality, are they going to go and choose their own space to actually do it? Or will they fit it into the spatial development framework that the municipality provides? You notice I'm not picking on any particular department deliberately. I'm being diplomatic. But this is a problem. And so many observers will actually say that in the recent past, we've replicated the apartheid pattern. Let's be frank. And the time has come to understand this phenomenon and to stop this phenomenon. And if you go onto the UN Habitat website, you'll see any amount of conversations happening globally about how urban spaces should be designed. And honorable members might find it very useful. I was going through it this morning. And last night. There's some very useful material there on virtually all the topics that we've discussed today. So what is the global best practice on public participation? Is the ward committee idea the only idea in the world? Because remember, everyone in the world who runs a decent government wants public participation, wants to hear the views of the public. So what are the 20 models that are available for public participation? The work committee idea is but one. So this is illustrating the point that we need to raise the bar amongst ourselves about the level of conversation we have and benchmark some of the things that we're doing in South Africa. Don't leave it to just a few academics to write papers about it, to let ourselves actually have a conversation in this area. And it's not as if this is secret knowledge. It's in the public domain. We've just got to study it. So, more sharply on the point about spatial integration, we're going to find some money in this area or get some money in this area and then come back to you in a few months' time and say what our findings are. The point about capacity of councillors has been made, and as Honourable Singh was certainly points out, it's political parties that are primarily responsible. And they are political processes, and we know that those are difficult things to control, whichever political party one might be referring to. But the last 15 years of democratic local government has given us a better understanding of the quality of people that you require. You cannot have people in a municipality where nobody understands financial statements. So, I mean, whether we like it or not, some people are chosen on the basis of popularity. It's also time to balance that out with skill, and particular types of skills, so that you get the right kind of governance within a municipality. So not everybody needs to be an accountant or a lawyer or whatever, but it'll be helpful to have a few of those from every political party, so that we can actually get the right kind of governance decisions in that regard. And that is again linked to other points made about training and capacity building. There will be all sorts of preparatory material that we will have, as COCTA, SALRA will have, and others will have, the object of which will be to say, if you are a new councillor, understand that these are the 20 laws that you should know. This is how a budgeting process works within a municipality. This is how water reticulation works in a municipality, etc. But eventually, we cannot have a repetition of what we have today in some instances, where even after 5 years, people don't understand what a municipality is and how it works. So it's like training as a lawyer, forgive me, because he's one on my left here. Going through your first degree, going through the exams, and then not knowing how on earth to interpret the law or to defend a client in court. Now, we need to ensure that we move up the development scale in that regard. As far as traditional leadership is concerned, I think in all fairness, we need to balance that scale. There are excellent traditional leaders in the country who understand what is the national interest, who understand how national interest is combined with their own local interest, and who play a very positive role in development processes, but in governance processes, in building social cohesion in localities, and in initiating processes of their own accord where communities benefit, particularly in mining-related areas. There are some excellent examples. So what we need to get is a better feel for both the excellent examples and the not-so-excellent examples. And we'll certainly do a bit more work. But there are patterns, Chair, that are of concern. And I think Mr. Posey made reference to that. In some of our provinces, we're increasingly seeing, let's call it property development, taking place in non-rateable property currently standing, which means that the rate base of a municipality could in fact be increased, but those properties are not rateable, or those developments are not rateable. So we've got to come to some understanding which says that a municipality is a municipality, and where there are rateable properties, they will be rated, and that revenue is an important component or a contribution to what we've been talking about as financial viability. How we get there is something that we need to cooperate across party lines to actually ensure that we move in the right direction. On the point that the DG made about the Western Cape, the more blunt answer is that the Western Cape is one of 9 provinces in South Africa. We are a national government, and as national government, we don't worry too much about which political party controls which province, or which municipality for that matter. The Constitution and the law requires us to do certain things, and we'll make sure that those things are done in the way they should be done. within our capabilities, obviously. So Uchiran is a very good example where from early this year, I don't know how many times we've been there, either myself or the deputy minister and myself, and on many occasions with the MEC responsible for local government in the Western Cape. There have been changes in the kind of political party coalitions that have been running that municipality recently. But regardless of all of that, what we were absolutely clear is that the idea that it had an unqualified audit for a while did not in any way detract from the dysfunctionality of the place. Council meetings were not taking place, council committee meetings were not taking place, budgets were not passed. Even at the 30th of June this year, that municipality didn't pass its budget, as a result of which the MEC responsible for finance had to act in terms of Section 139(4) of the Constitution, which says if a budget is not passed, then 139(4) begins to come into operation. A budget is prepared for the municipality, although it didn't quite happen that way. And the municipality is then obliged to adopt the budget. In addition to that, for some time we've been in discussion with the provincial administration on implementing 139(1)(b) of the constitution in the municipality, which has now happened. And indeed, it took a lot of negotiations. But this past Monday, I'm happy to say that the MEC, Deputy Minister Nell, visited Uchiran. The administrator, Mr. Chetty, is in place. Let's give this process another month or so to find out what the diagnosis is of some of the challenges, some of which we've seen, some of which we might not have seen. We must make sure that those who are responsible for financial or other forms of mismanagement face the consequences of what they have been actually responsible for. Honorable Mashoko, Ward 28, if you write a letter to me, then that gives us a basis to formally take it forward. All right, so that's a formal request to you. Misa has been explained. Honorable Mabulani makes a very important point about provinces, and you're right, cooperative governance is not just about local government. In fact, cooperative governance is about the system of intergovernmental relations. So it includes national, provincial, and local spheres of government. Provinces definitely need to be reviewed after 20 years of democracy in terms of their shape, in terms of their functions, and the efficacy with which they perform those functions as well. But right now, our focus is on local government, and I hope we can actually undertake some of these responsibilities in the near future. Honorable Moasti makes a very important point about managers. We often only look at this little group of politicians. There's about 9,000 of them in political offices in municipalities. But there's 300,000 employees in municipalities. So the state, as represented by municipalities, is about how 300,000 people relate to citizens, the 55 million who live in all of those 278 municipalities, as we have them currently. And when we talk about a developmental orientation or their technical competence, I think that's an excellent question. Do we have a bureaucracy there that understands in its entirety what its responsibilities are? I think there's some very dedicated and excellent people in municipalities across the country. And then there are those that have been badly chosen, and we've been in the process of rectifying that by setting up minimum competency standards. So even in this regard, you can't hire somebody who knows nothing about a particular technical area and then train them. In the first instance, you should hire somebody who has some competence in that area. Now, if you want to then become more advanced in your understanding of the technical area, then training becomes a valid investment in the individual. And I think that we still have to get that balance right between appointing the right people with the right capabilities, with the possibilities of advancing, versus employing, for example, employing me to take care of the engineering services in a municipality. You're wasting your time employing me. Partly because I don't want to learn anymore. I'm lazy. But I don't mind taking the salary. So that's something that we need to actually deal with. Honorable Mketwa's point, again, we can't comment on the specifics that you've actually raised, but the problems that you raise are valid. And again, it's the municipality and or provinces who are on the ground that must negotiate with the relevant parties to make sure that the consent is given or the cooperation offered to enhance service delivery in those areas. But where there are particular obstacles, again, if you can give us the information, let's see what we can do to at least understand the problem a little better and see if there's a contribution we can make to resolving some of those issues. So in sum, Chairperson, as many of you have said, and we must thank you for your support and encouragement in this regard, back to basics is beginning to make a difference. Don't expect it in 12 months, as many of you pointed out, to create a revolution, but many of you, it seems, have already been on the ground and you've seen some of the differences that are being made. Secondly, changing things like spatial patterns of settlements and so on will take longer, but it's the identification of some of those systemic areas in a more sharp way that will enable us to start focusing on them a little better and understanding what are the instruments available to us to bring about the changes. And what we're trying to do is to get the balance right between tackling some of the systemic issues on the one hand and some of the more current and immediate fault lines where intervention in one form or another is actually required. Provinces have, if you look at Chapter 7, provincial government is mentioned much more than non-national government in that chapter. So they carry a larger burden. And in evaluating with provincial governments their respective COCTAP departments, we'll get a better understanding of what capacity they have and what capacity they need. But what we've also indicated to you is that as the national department, we are going through a very sharp reorganization process to align the department under the leadership of the Director General with the kind of objectives that we've set, but also the style of work, which is not a hands-off style, it's a hands-on style. It might take a little bit of time to zoom in to a particular area, but I'm sure that if we had the right resources, we could probably get there sooner rather than later, but it's an ambition worth pursuing. So on behalf of all of us, thank you very much for the hearing and the interaction that we've enjoyed today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister and the team. Honourable members, I think we have now exhausted. Not that Honourable saying we are exhausted now. Okay. You must unleash your fire now. Thank you very much, colleagues, and we agreed in that we would invite Misa at a certain point in time to come and have a discussion with them. Surely that day also, Director General, we should also be dealing with the report of the park infrastructure. Whatever time, really, when we are ready, we should do so, because the Minister then will assist us also to address some of the challenges. And I think we should do that. Then surely the Municipal Demarcation Board will also meet with us very soon. The point that Honorable Mapulan is raising surely would be an issue I think to engage on it. And then in other issues of preparation for other areas there. And I think we have covered the point and the actual basis, the assessment in terms of the strength of municipalities, think there are no points that you didn't cover, Mashubu. Number what 28 are you fine?
I'm fine, but
okay.
This government, all communities in South Africa belong to this government. Not any particular party, you see.
Thank you very much, colleagues. That would be